Good afternoon, and welcome to the Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission's en banc hearing on the Marcellus Shale jurisdictional issues. I am Administrative Law Judge Susan Caldwell. I will be running the hearing here today. At this point, I would like to ask all of you to please put your cell phones on silent mode. If you do have to hold a conversation amongst yourselves, we ask that you leave the room in order to do so. Today we have a set agenda. The people who are going to be speaking have been asked to be here and have filed their comments ahead of time. They will be asked to adhere to a 10-minute limit. I will introduce you to this light bar system. When the green light is on, you have 10 minutes. When the yellow light comes on, you're down to 30 seconds. And when the red light comes on, I will ask you to please finish your sentence and close out your proceeding. At this point, I will ask the chairman if he would like to say a few words.
Thank you, Judge Caldwell. Good afternoon, and thank you all for attending today this special en banc hearing to examine PUC jurisdictional issues involving the Marcellus Shale development in the state. A special thank you to the parties for making the effort to prepare comments ahead of time and for being here today. And welcome everyone in the audience, especially Representative Tina Pickett. Representative Ray, front row. Representative Pickett represents the people of Bradford and Susquehanna County, and I know she's vitally interested in what we're going to hear today and in all of the issues surrounding this incredible gas development in her counties and throughout the state. All of the comments that were filed in writing ahead of time are available on the Public Utility Commission's website. If you just go to the Natural Gas tab and click on Marcellus Shale, you'll see those comments. And audio of today's meeting will also be available at the same location on our website. We've received interesting comments already, and we've carefully examined what we've received, not only from those who will testify in person today, but from others who will not be testifying today. But because we have received an interest from others who would like to personally testify and have an opportunity to have an open discussion with the Commission, we will be holding a second en banc hearing, just like this one, at 1 o'clock p.m. on June 16th in this same room. And we will be inviting other parties to be with us on that day. We will be issuing a secretarial letter which will ask that written comments be submitted ahead of time, and will provide another opportunity for other interested parties to provide written testimony. With that, I welcome my colleagues on the bench with me who will have a few short remarks. Let's start with Vice Chairman Tyrone Christie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we all know, Marcellus Shale is really big, enough gas to economically recover right here underneath our own feet, enough gas in Pennsylvania to literally run the entire country for 20 years. And just as we do with electricity, Pennsylvania can easily become a net exporter of natural gas instead of an importer in the very near future. And I just don't know of any other development opportunity that we have in this state that can even come close to this economic potential as Marcellus Shale. There are a lot of direct benefits that we can easily see. We've all heard the stories of literally poor old farmers becoming multimillionaires overnight, billions of dollars to be spent on pipelines, processing facilities, storage facilities, and yes, even water treatment facilities for frack water discharge. There are other benefits that we all know about as well. Lower fuel costs to heat our homes and run our businesses. But there are some hidden benefits here as well. Instead of paying to transport natural gas from the Gulf as well as other parts of the country, we have the opportunity to avoid spending billions of dollars on these pipeline transportation costs. And another benefit that I see here is that instead of with the lower gas prices, we should have lower electricity bills. As many of you have heard me testify in a number of other proceedings, natural gas prices play a very important role in how electricity is priced in the wholesale market. If we can lower the natural gas prices, we can literally save billions of dollars on our electric bills. It's that simple. A lot of benefits, but we also have a lot of challenges before us in how we make this all happen. Some of these challenges are right here in this commission's jurisdiction, and some, such as certain environmental issues, are contained within other Pennsylvania agencies. But at the end of the day, we need everyone involved to be firing on all cylinders to truly maximize the potential here. And I think the PUC has a very important role to play to help provide the consistency, certainty, and the clarity on the regulations upon which the industry can plan its business program. There is nothing worse than uncertainty for businesses that intend to spend billions of dollars in your state. And I think that's one of the primary reasons why we're having this hearing today. I look forward to hearing the testimony of all involved. A couple of areas that I'm particularly interested in is obtaining a better understanding of how our natural gas distribution companies or private companies can help with the infrastructure build-out that's necessary to carry this gas to the markets. It's my understanding that we already have 550 wells that are capped and unable to deliver the gas because of the lack of takeaway pipeline capacity. We also need to fully understand the nature and the extent of the regulatory oversight that should be taken by this commission and that assumed by the federal government on gathering systems. This appears to be a real gray area regarding responsibility, and I think we need to clearly define the responsibility between the parties. Thank you, and I look forward to your comments today.
Thank you, Vice Chairman Christie. Commissioner Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I also would like to extend a hearty welcome to all of the participants here this afternoon. I think the Vice Chairman's earlier comments fairly summarized the purpose of our being here today. I would also like to really emphasize that this is a tremendous economic opportunity in Pennsylvania, but it's absolutely important that we do it right, because there's no opportunity to really undo it if we get it wrong. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Gardner. Commissioner Paulson.
Thank you, Chairman Carr. I'd like to also echo the sentiment expressed here by my colleagues and again thank our panelists for their participation on really what I consider to be one of the most important economic development opportunities for the Commonwealth going forward. I like to use the word economic development because, in my view, the Marcellus Shale marks the single biggest economic opportunity our Commonwealth has seen since the first oil well was struck back in the 1800s in Titusville. Since that time, Pennsylvania has reigned supreme in supplying the nation with oil and petroleum products. I should also note we are the second largest generation state for electrical power in the country. It is clear from the slew of studies that have been conducted over the last few years that the Marcellus Shale will likely be, as it's been quoted by our DEP secretary, a game changer for our state in terms of job creation, attracting investment, and generating revenue and stabilizing, as Vice Chairman alluded to, energy prices. In fact, a study that was conducted last summer by Penn State concludes that by the year 2020, the Marcellus Shale development could generate as much as $13.5 billion in value-added revenue to the state and create almost 175,000 new jobs. So I'm anxiously looking forward to the exchange here today with our panelists and appreciate their participation and, more importantly, the investment that the member companies of this industry are making right now in our Commonwealth. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Paulson. Now, for my part, before we ask our first witnesses to testify, let me give at least my view of why we are holding this hearing and another one on June 16th. The Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission has been in existence in one form or another since 1913. We are a creature of the legislature. We are not a part of the executive branch of government. We are agents of the legislature to do what they could do, and in fact used to do, before 1913. We are given very explicit statutory authority, and we must follow it. We can't exceed our authority. And among that authority is very broad, are very broad provisions to protect the public interest. We have 8 individuals who on a full-time basis inspect pipelines for safety reasons. We are paid and compensated by the federal government to be the federal government's agents. This is the United States Department of Transportation, to inspect certain pipelines. But because the federal government doesn't have the inspectors to do it, they rely on the states. We are the only state in the Northeast that does not have the authority to inspect all pipelines in the state. Unless the pipeline is a public utility within the definition of a public within the definition of the Public Utility Code, we do not have the authority to inspect pipes. We've asked the legislature for that additional authority. We've done so because our safety inspectors have observed certain bad practices. We are receiving an increasing number of complaints from individuals, and we have to tell them that we simply can't help them because we do not have the legal authority to do so. On top of that, we regulate a number of water companies, investor-owned water companies, and municipal systems that operate outside the municipal boundaries. We are concerned, perhaps unreasonably and unnecessarily so, that some of the chemicals that are being used for hydrofracturing of the Marcellus Shale may get into the watersheds and water supply of some of our regulated water companies, and that they simply do not have the capability to detect or to clean the water to remove these chemicals. That may or may not be the case, but we feel as responsible public officials that we have a duty to at least inquire of those who have better information than we do. We are particularly concerned about total dissolved solids and the fact that most, at least in my knowledge, our water companies do not have the capability in our water treatment plants to handle so-called TDSs at high levels. We are concerned about possible gas migration into neighboring wells. And in fact, we've had a few instances where this has been suspected as the cause of certain explosions. We've been concerned that there have been un-PUC certificated motor carriers. In other words, motor carriers who do not have PUC certification to operate and to carry materials in the regions where drilling is occurring, taking materials to the well sites. The reason that we certificate trucks that carry these kinds of materials is we want to make sure that they have adequate insurance should they be in an accident and harm innocent individuals. We also inspect, we have motor carrier inspectors who inspect these vehicles to make sure that they are in good shape and roadworthy. So if they're not PUC certificated, we can't be sure that all of that's been done. We therefore increased our motor carrier enforcement activity, particularly in the northeastern part of the state. We're concerned that all of those involved in the Marcellus Shale play abide by the Pennsylvania Run Coal statute. That's dial 811 before you dig. That means you adequately map where you're putting your pipelines. We are concerned about certain practices that we have heard are taking place with landowners when rights of way agents have approached landowners and have represented that they are public utilities and have the power, therefore, of eminent domain, and you either take the offer or we're going to condemn your property. That is very reprehensible behavior, even if you are a public utility. And the industry needs to understand that public utilities use the power of eminent domain that's given to them by the legislature on exceedingly rare occasions. And I think that one of the things that from my prior discussions with some of the people in the industry will tell us today is that this issue has occurred in other states and that there have been good practices put in place elsewhere that we might adopt in Pennsylvania. And finally, and just very briefly, we're very interested in the whole Marcellus Shale development for two other reasons. It affects electricity prices, believe it or not, because of federal pricing mechanisms. The wholesale price of electricity is determined by the price of natural gas. And therefore, we want to hear what that development level is going to be and the possible beneficial effects it's going to have on wholesale electricity prices, which affects about 70% of electric bills in Pennsylvania. The amounts, all bills, 70% of the bill for all bills. And finally, our natural gas utilities that are regulated by law must acquire their supply for those customers who do not switch to an alternative gas supplier. They must obtain that default supply on a least cost procurement basis. And they have to go through an annual proceeding in which they demonstrate and prove to our satisfaction that they have acquired that power, or that natural gas as cheaply as possible. So we want to know what's going to be the effect of all of this new gas for Pennsylvania. Is it going to stay in Pennsylvania? Is it going to somehow have an effect on natural gas prices in Pennsylvania, which will help our natural gas companies keep natural gas prices as low as possible? So for those who have asked, why are we adding these hearings? Those are just some of the reasons. So we look forward to hearing the testimony and asking your questions afterward. Judge Carlisle?
Thank you, Chairman. One other point I'd like to make before I get started, I'd like to ask the speakers to please be careful not to discuss any ongoing cases before the commission. Not only can I not hear that kind of testimony, but neither can the commission. All right, then at this point, I would like to call upon Alex Nankanich from the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Good afternoon, Chairman Cawley and commissioners. My name is Alex Nankanich. I work for the U.S. DOT Pipeline and Hazardous Material Safety Administration, or PHMSA. PHMSA enforces the pipeline safety laws that are codified in 49 CFR Parts 190 through 199. These laws set the minimum safety standards for the design, installation, inspection, operation, replacement, and maintenance of pipeline facilities. Two-thirds of the United States energy consumption is transported by more than 2.5 million miles of energy pipelines. PHMSA, along with its state partners, perform inspections, enforce regulations over much of this system to ensure adequate protection against risks to life, property, and the environment that are posed by pipeline transportation. Thank you.
You certainly did better than entertainment. Thank you, sir. Next on our list, we have Mr. D'Amico, who is not going to be here with us today. So we'll move right on to the Marcellus Shale Coalition, and you can decide who goes first.
And so we'll go first. Chairman Colley, commissioners, thank you very much for the opportunity today. I guess I'd first like to use maybe a little bit of that extra time to talk about the scope of this hearing. You know, we have addressed the questions that were presented around the safety and utility oversight of the natural gas gathering pipelines in Pennsylvania. Those points that you made, Chairman Colley, are all very important and are critical issues that the Marcellus Shale Coalition and our members are addressing right now. The total dissolved solids and the POTWs. We're working closely with the Department of Environmental Protection on Chapter 95 and Chapter 93 that address those issues. Gas migration is also very important, and the well casing standards under Chapter 78 have been reworked with great partnership of the industry and the Department of Environmental Protection. Certainly the water supply issues and the POTWs are something that we've been involved with over the last year and a half, and look forward to working with the PUC on those issues. The One Call, our organization is very committed to working with the Pennsylvania One Call system. It's been an integral part of how we do business, and our members of that organization, and we'll touch on that briefly in the testimony. With respect to the behavior you mentioned on the eminent domain and some claims that are obviously unfounded there, our industry is disappointed to hear those kind of comments, and we're with you to work on the best management practices for Pennsylvania that will reflect very well on both our industry and the Commonwealth. You also mentioned location marginal pricing, and these cost procurement issues are very important to us as you, and I look forward to perhaps being invited back to address those issues in a future hearing, which may take that much to get over all of these. But we look forward to coming back and addressing many of those other issues you brought up. But today, we really wanted to focus on some of the safety and utility oversight that we had prepared. My name is Catherine Klaber. I'm president of the Marcellus Shale Coalition. We were formed in 2008 as an organization to focus on the responsible growth with the economic benefits that many of you have alluded to of the Marcellus. We've grown to 92 members as of this month, representing the majority of the companies that are now operating in the Marcellus. We're still a young organization, but very vibrant, growing, and active with the daily involvement of many of our members to address the very questions like the ones in front of us today. The natural gas industry, you know, as has been mentioned, is bringing huge investment capital and the associated job creation to Pennsylvania. It really is a special opportunity for all of us in the Commonwealth, but we must also take care to foster this development with the kind of modernized statutes, regulations, competitive regulatory framework that we're here to discuss today. We also must continue to keep public safety and environmental protection as the cornerstone of how we conduct business in the Commonwealth, particularly a timely topic on today's Earth Day. With the industry's contribution of more than 100,000 jobs and $1 billion in revenues for state and local governments this year alone, there's a lot riding on our collective deliberations and actions. I'd like to introduce Lindsay Sander to my right. She's worked actively in her career on the definition and re-regulation of natural gas gathering, and much of her career has been dedicated to the very pipeline safety and utility regulatory issues we're here today to discuss. And we appreciate this opportunity. The Commission put forth several questions related to pipeline safety and the utility regulation of gathering in intrastate pipeline. We want to address those questions in addition to providing information on the history and current regulation of those assets. And we know our time is limited, but we really do our best to address the questions you put forth and to look forward to working constantly, I hope, with the PUC in the future. Really three points that I'd like to have us make this afternoon. First, that industry supports the regulation of gathering pipeline consistent with the requirements of 49 CFR Chapter 192, which is overseen by the U.S. Department of Transportation's Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. We would support the PUC becoming a state agent for the purpose of inspecting and enforcing the current safety regulatory requirements found in 49 CFR 192 for natural gas gathering pipelines. The MSC, the Marcellus Shale Coalition, believes that gathering facilities are regulated now appropriately for safety under federal law, and that these regulations can address safely and sufficiently the development of the Marcellus Shale. The NSC believes that the regulation of a natural gas gathering system for safety purposes and that system's utility status are independent issues and they should not be intermingled. These are two distinct issues, one addressing the operational conditions of a system and the other dealing with financial transactions and contracts of an entity. For these reasons, we have segregated clearly these issues for the purpose of today's discussion. Just to close my testimony, safety, I want to emphasize and can't emphasize enough, is a top priority for our members and for pipeline operations. Tens of thousands of industry personnel nationwide work hard to ensure the safety of the national energy infrastructure, and their commitment to safety is unmatched. For a number of reasons, including the protection of the public and environment, costly service interruptions, financial liability, income loss, and public relationships, to name a few, it is in the best interest of operators to keep the commodity being safely transported in the pipelines. At this time, I'd like to pass the testimony to Lindsay.
Commissioners and Chairman, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today. I'm here on behalf of the Marcellus Shale Coalition. The MSC submitted extensive comments on these issues being discussed here today. In lieu of reading the testimony, which is long, I'd like to highlight and reinforce several of the key issues relating to safety and utility status of pipeline systems. Today, there is no gap in safety regulation. The U.S. Department of Transportation Pipeline and Hazardous Safety Materials Administration regularly reviews the requirements imposed on operators to address the risk and integrity of the systems. These regulatory requirements continue to evolve over time and as operators and regulators learn and gain more information. For gathering lines, there are clear requirements that seek to mitigate the risk posed by gathering lines and specifically focusing on the operational characteristics of a line and the proximity to the general public. We have highlighted this history of gathering regulations for the purpose of safety in our comments as well as the current regulations. We believe these standards are appropriate and will help ensure the development of the Marcellus in a safe manner. It is important to note that the greatest risk to the integrity of any type of pipeline is third-party damage, or more simply put, damage by excavators. It seems appropriate to note that April is National Damage Prevention Month. Operators have planned events throughout the country to promote underground damage prevention and the importance of calling before you dig. Over the past 10 years, the industry has made great strides in damage prevention efforts, including the formation of the Common Ground Alliance, an organization dedicated to bringing stakeholders together to develop best practices relating to underground damage prevention and the implementation of 811 that the chairman spoke of earlier. And 811, if those who are not familiar with it, it's a national one-call number. It allows an operator or any excavator to reach their local one-call law. So, for example, if you move and you want to know the one-call number in your state, you don't have to think about what number I dial. I just dial 811. It's universal, just like the 911 system. Operators and regulators also have pushed for stronger one-call enforcement with fewer exemptions and increased enforcement. Pennsylvania is a great example of one of the states being proactive, placing an emphasis on the common ground best practices. Another important effort the industry has undertaken is greater awareness of pipelines, or what we refer to as public awareness. The importance of providing key information to those potentially impacted by a pipeline in their community is important. Everyone has a responsibility in pipeline safety. Without education on these issues, we cannot expect the public to take steps to protect the integrity of our systems or their safety. For these reasons, pipeline operators provide information to at least four stakeholder groups on a regular basis. These groups are the public, emergency responders, excavators, and public officials. The messages contained within this information provided is tailored to the stakeholder group and includes the purpose and location of pipelines, the hazards they pose, and the most importantly, how to recognize and respond to a potential or known pipeline emergency. The Commission has discussed the best way to ensure that operators are complying with the requirements of 49 CFR 192. Some have suggested that clarifying the definition of utility will ensure that pipelines are regulated for safety appropriately. Let me say that safety and the utility status of a pipeline should not be intermingled. The definition of utility is subject to ongoing interpretation and historical precedent. In reviewing the testimony for today's hearing, it is clear there are a variety of opinions about the definition of utility and what it means to be a utility under the current law. Even if the definition of utility is clarified in the Pennsylvania Code, the meaning and interpretation could be challenged for some time. Safety is not subjective. The applicability of rules needs to be clear.
It does not and should not be confused with financial considerations or disputes on whether an entity serves the public. Instead, safety regulations should be based on operational conditions and the potential risks they pose. Many operators have expressed concern with the possible utility regulation of their systems, and at the same time, they acknowledge the importance of complying with the existing federal safety requirements. Separating these two issues will help to clarify the intent and expectations of the Commission with regard to safety. The industry is committed to a good neighbor. Oh, I'm sorry. Three more sentences? I'm almost there. Okay. Thank you. The industry is committed to being a good neighbor. Operators are making significant investments in the state, and we plan to be here for a long time. The MSC and individual operators are dedicated to pipeline safety and transporting energy resources in the safest, most efficient, and economical manner possible. We know that any incident is a poor reflection on our industry, and we take our safety of our lines and facilities in this regard very seriously. We appreciate the opportunity to be here today. We are happy to answer any questions you may have today or in the future.
Thank you, Ms. Sandel. Thank you, Ms. Claiborne. Now we'll turn to Mr. Spiegelmeyer, Vice President of Government Relations for Chesapeake Energy. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chairman Colley, distinguished commissioners, and staff of the Public Utility Commission. Again, my name is Dave Spiegelmeyer. I'm Vice President of Government Relations for Chesapeake Energy, and I'm first Vice Chairman of the Marcellus Shale Coalition. Thank you for allowing us this opportunity to share our thoughts with the Commission at the Sunbonk hearing, and we look forward to answering your questions. Prior to jumping into my testimony, I did want to respond to a few of the comments made by the commissioners prior to the formal testimony. Commissioner Gardner, you made the comment that we need to do it right. Nothing could be more than the truth in that statement. We wholeheartedly agree. This industry has invested more than $10 billion already in the Commonwealth. We need to do it right, or we won't do it for very long, and we know that. We take that responsibility seriously. Chairman Colley, you made the comment about hydraulic fracturing. We've been hydraulically fracturing wells in Pennsylvania for more than 60 years. This Groundwater Protection Council, a group of state regulators across the country, have studied this industry and hydraulic fracturing in depth. There's not a single case of subsurface groundwater contamination from hydraulic fracturing, and we take that responsibility to do it properly with the utmost of concern, and we will. Chemical disclosure. The Marcellus Shale Coalition fully supports chemical disclosure. It's on our website. It's on the DEP's website. It's on Chesapeake's hydraulic fracturing website. It's on the material safety data sheets or MSDS sheets on every single well site, and we'll continue to provide that information. As for land agents, nothing can be more than the truth, and we need the land agents to respect the people in our communities and here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. For those of you listening on PCN and those of you in this room, if you are approached by a land agent, you're not familiar with oil and gas law, seek the counsel of an attorney or someone close to oil and gas law before signing your name to an oil and gas lease. Now for the formal part of my testimony. The Marcellus Shale is not new to Pennsylvania. The formation is more than 380 million years old, rests atop the Onondaga Formation, some 7,000 to 8,000 feet below the surface of the Commonwealth. Our industry has drilled through the Marcellus since we began producing natural gas in 1859 in the Commonwealth. However, we've not had the technology to be able to produce the Marcellus profitably. For information purposes, the Marcellus is the silt and mudlay that fell to the bottom of the prehistoric lakes that existed to the west of the Allegheny Thrust. Estimates of supply in the Marcellus have been suggested to be as high as 500 trillion cubic feet. To put that in perspective, we use about 20 trillion cubic feet as a nation annually. More than half of that recoverable with today's technology. Again, although we've drilled through the Marcellus for years, it's the technology enhancements through horizontal drilling technique that have made drilling into tight shale formations like the Marcellus profitable for our business. Many in the room today believe we actually drill into open caverns in the Earth's crust or pockets in the Earth to produce natural gas. Not the case. The Marcellus is a very dense shale, but it contains pore spaces that hold vast amounts of natural gas. In fact, early production results from horizontal drilling for natural gas here in the Commonwealth have been outstanding, and they very well change the way we think about the end-use applications for natural gas as a homegrown fuel. To put production into perspective here in Pennsylvania, in 2008, our production industry drilled about 4,000 natural gas into shallow formations across the Commonwealth. We produced 182 BCF, a billion cubic feet, of the 810 BCF of natural gas we consumed, about 24%. As each of you know, the remainder of that natural gas was transported here into Pennsylvania from the Gulf Coast states and the Midwest to meet our state's and region's demand for natural gas. You know better than I that long-haul transportation rates make up a significant portion of a consumer's natural gas bill, adding as much as $2 an MCF for transporting that commodity to our home or business. Based upon early production results from horizontal drilling operations here in the Commonwealth, in West Virginia as well, I believe we have a game changer on our hands in terms of natural gas production. Based upon early production figures, if the horizontal production drilling industry can continue to ramp up production to a level of 2,500 to 3,000 horizontal wells per year, and we've drilled about 1,000 wells so far horizontally here in the Commonwealth, by 2014 we will become natural gas independent and a net exporter of natural gas from this Commonwealth, meeting the needs of our residents and industries while supplying a domestic, abundant, affordable, and environmentally clean product for our consumers of this country. The Commission indeed can benefit consumers in the long term by encouraging more locally produced natural gas into the utility operations across this Commonwealth. I would add also all steel, glass, plastics, chemicals, fertilizers, powdered metals, pharmaceuticals, some electric generation, and natural gas vehicles also use natural gas as a primary fuel. However, contrary to the many reports that Pennsylvania operators are reaping huge rewards from Pennsylvania's production, the reality is that we're investing in the long-term sustainable growth of the Marcellus industry by investing in infrastructure. The subject matter of the hearing today is right on, that the industry will need to develop additional midstream pipeline capacity to move Marcellus gas to the long-haul pipelines to transport natural gas to the utilities and to the markets across not only here in Pennsylvania, but the East Coast. And yes, we agree that it must be done safely and with the utmost of environmental care as we build the necessary infrastructure to bring America's cleanest fossil fuel to the burner tip. Companies that are part of this coalition are already investing, as I said before, $10 million into investing, taking leases for drilling operation, building well sites and pad locations, building compression facilities to move the gas through the pipeline system, and constructing the stripping capacity to take the heavy hydrocarbons out of the co-products out of the natural gas stream from production in Pennsylvania. Most importantly, we're building the necessary staff to serve our industry to meet our nation's natural gas needs. As many in the room know, I've been in this industry for 27 years working in the pipeline and utility business. I joined Chesapeake a year ago as employee number 220. As of this week, we have 1,023 Pennsylvania employees, and we employed thousands of employees in the construction and trade unions across our Commonwealth to support Chesapeake's operations. We employ thousands, and also from the Penn State Economic Report, an emerging giant, prospects and economic impacts of developing the Marcellus Shale play, it projects that we'll have more than 107,000 employees employed serving the Marcellus Shale industry in Pennsylvania. Shale plays across the United States have changed the outlook for natural gas supply long term, and Chesapeake believes it will lessen the price volatility that existed in a tight supply market over the past decade. In fact, during early 2008 and through early 2009, the oil price spike, we witnessed the decoupling of natural gas prices from that of oil. Today, natural gas is by far one of our country's best energy values on a BTU basis, and we should use more of it. I've responded directly in my testimony to your questions. We'll stand for questions, additional questions that you may have. Thank you very much for having us here today.
Questions from the commission?
Let's start with the vice chairman.
Good, thank you. I'll try to keep my number of my questions to a minimum here. And I guess I'll start with Alex, since you started first. On page two of your testimony, you mentioned that the DOT has elected not to regulate gathering lines in Class 1, and that many of the Marcellus-related gathering lines are and will be in Class 1. And thus exempt from your regulation at this time. In your opinion, should the Pennsylvania Commission also elect not to regulate the gathering lines in Class 1? And if so, why or why not?
Thank you, Vice Chairman Christie. You are correct that gathering lines in Class 1 throughout this country are not regulated either by FEMSA or by most states. There are one or two states that do regulate certain production lines and certain gathering lines in Class 1. Specifically, Texas and Colorado have a few regulations on production gathering lines in Class 1 areas.
Do you define class one? No, I don't mean it for others.
PHMSA has four classifications that have to do with basically housing density and population. Class one is an area where on a siding 1 mile scale of pipeline, you have 10 or fewer homes within 220 yards on either side of that pipeline. Again, 10 or fewer homes on a 1 mile pipeline that extends 220 yards out from either side of the pipeline.
So the idea is there's more scrutiny the more that the area is populated around the pipeline. Is that it? And there's less scrutiny when the population density is less.
That would be one way to look at it. Although PHMSA looks at regulation, prioritizes where they're going to inspect and prioritizes what they're going to regulate. PHMSA has chosen when they recodified the gathering line regulations in 2006. PHMSA chose not to regulate in a class one area because of the low density and generally speaking, a lot of these wells are in very rural areas. The rulemaking in 2006 was a negotiated rulemaking, which means that the public has a chance to speak. They have public meetings, and also industry is at the table and has input into the rulemaking. Does that answer your question, Vice Chairman?
Question would be for Lindsay. On page 4 and 5 of your testimony, and it's at the bottom where you mentioned that the DOT has clarified how gathering lines were to be regulated by establishing different categories based on the risk to the public. And it says that gathering lines operated in densely populated areas and operated with high pressures and stresses are required to follow the vast majority of the requirements applicable to transmission pipelines. And it goes on further to say that those gathering lines operating at a lower pressure and stresses in densely populated areas are required to meet certain construction standards. My question is, what's your view on low pressure lines operating in remote areas? And what's your experience in Pennsylvania as far as how many low-pressure lines operating in remote areas that we might have operating right now?
I'm going to try to take this in pieces, and if I don't get to all of it, please remind me. Chairman, Mr. Christie, and Commissioner Christie, excuse me. The way regulated gathering works is that it's divided by a number of factors. Specifically class location and SMICE, which is specified minimum yield strength. It has to do with the amount of pressure that's going through the pipe and the parameters around the engineering of the steel. I'm trying to, in non-engineering terms. There is, not for gas lines, there's no such thing as low pressure regulation. It really has to do with the SMICE of the system. And so the reason they would be a lower SMICE would mean that they have a lower risk, per se, with regard to the engineering factors that are taken into consideration. The reason that PHMSA came up and developed the rule that they did is they felt that the cost benefit for regulating lines in rural areas, they just didn't pose the risk that other lines potentially did. And so it's really based around the population factor. So when you start moving into the different class schedules, whether it's 2, 3, or 4, and a class 2 is between 10 and 46 units or potential places of occupancy, you do start adding additional regulatory requirements that you have to abide by. And really, then the trigger of the level of the regulatory requirements that you have to follow is based on whether you're above or below 20% of SMICE. And so it's not so much a pressure issue, but pressure is a factor in determining the SMICE. Does that answer your question?
This may be a follow-up question. Would you recommend that we not regulate the Class 1 pipelines?
Historically, I can't speak for the NSCD. I have not taken a position on it. I can tell you that when we did look at an industry, it was a huge working group of all kinds of different stakeholders when PHMSA looked at these rules over the past decade. And they did an extensive survey of the history and incidents that had occurred. And there were very few, if any, incidents that occurred in rural areas. And that's why we feel comfortable. So do I feel comfortable with the current regulatory scheme as it's currently developed? Yes.
Thank you. I just have one question for David. On page 2 of your testimony, you mentioned that the commission can benefit consumers in the long term by encouraging more locally produced gas into the utility operations across the Commonwealth. And I certainly agree with that. But I also noted in one of your answers to the question, you indicated that Chesapeake's intention is not to tie in directly into the local distribution companies, and I would presume more into the interstate pipelines. Can you help me reconcile these two statements?
Sure, Vice Chairman. I would share with you a couple of different points. First of all, if it makes sense for us to avoid additional pipeline construction, there would certainly be a case where we could tie directly into a public utility. However, all of the public utilities in the Commonwealth, I believe, have taps on the interstate pipeline system. We actually move gas through marketers who sell to the public utilities of the Commonwealth, and that's reflective of my comments.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a follow-on question to the Class 1 gathering lines, and I'd like for all of the panelists to really respond to it. Pennsylvania may be, in fact, Pennsylvania is hugely different from Texas. In the rural areas that could be defined in Texas, probably are not one-to-one comparable to what you have in Texas. And so my question is when a Class 1 line originates in a sparsely populated rural area, but along the way to the transmission lines, it has to pass through relatively dense population centers or small towns. How do you now want to treat that regulatory requirement? And I'll add that this is a major concern of mine.
I'll field that question. When a jurisdictional gathering line as defined in 49 CFR Part 192.8 is in a Class 1, it is not jurisdictional to PHMSA. When that pipeline, the sliding 1 mile scale that I talked about earlier, comes into a Class 2 location. Class 2 location, more densely populated. Okay, so it has to do with the number of homes and number of businesses in an area. It becomes regulated in a Class 2.
Only across the range where you have the population density, the increase in the population density.
I'm not sure I understand across the range.
Well, as you pointed out, if we're talking about a 10-mile length for the pump, go ahead.
I'm sorry. The class, when operators determine the classifications, they go along, they walk the pipeline and count the number of houses. If you have 10, less than 10 houses anywhere along your pipeline in a 1 mile length, it's Class 1. As soon as that number hits 10 in a 1 mile length, you have a Class 2 and you become jurisdictional from then on in that area until maybe you cross into another rural area where 1 mile length of the number of houses again gets reduced.
So you could have a single pipeline that goes 100 miles that could have three or four different classifications.
That's correct, yes. But that's not the norm normally in the
It may not be the norm in Texas, but it may be the norm here in Pennsylvania.
I suppose it could be, yes.
And Commissioner Gardner, you'd ask for us each to respond in turn. This issue of regulation in Class 1, 2, 3, and 4 is very critical, obviously, from an education standpoint for us all to understand not only how that rule works, but also how it applies in Pennsylvania. And I think when we hear the term unregulated for Class 1, that's really a misnomer. I've spent a lot of time on this issue even with my members to understand exactly what happens through this operation process. And when a gathering line is being put in, a full evaluation of that line is done by the operators. Every single, as you mentioned, walking and using the GIS tools that are available and checking those on the ground to make sure that there's a full understanding of what is the local environment of that planned pipeline. So, to that effect, the evaluation against 40 CFR Chapter 192 is done for every inch of pipeline, regardless of how that's going to turn out, and is reassessed, and to your point and to Mr. Dankovich's comments, you can have Class 1, Class 2, Class 3, or Class 4 on one pipeline. It happens to be now. There are, in some areas of, most areas of Pennsylvania, it's Class 1 and or Class 2, but we're here for the long term, as the comments had alluded to, and believe that we very much want to plan right here and right now for growth around this industry, for growth in our communities that may at that time take a pipeline from Class 1 to Class 2 to Class 3 and maybe to Class 4, and we want to be prepared for that.
Chairman and Commissioners, one thing I'd like to just point out on that is that when operators build their systems, they're very conscious of the fact that class locations change. And they take that into account when planning the structure and the soundness of the project overall, and whether it's the thickness of the pipe or the regulatory requirements, they could be imposed on them depending on if that class location changes. And so, for example, one of the regulatory requirements that's required under 192 is that you have to meet certain minimum construction requirements. And pipeline operators typically, obviously I can't speak for everyone, but follow those construction requirements because they know that if they would ever move from a Class 1 location to a Class 2 location, that they need to be and have met those standards when they constructed the pipeline. And so there are a lot of safety mechanisms that are taken into account from the very get-go, even if they're only in the Class location or Class 1 location.
Commissioner Gardner, consistent with my testimony, if the commission does indeed seek agency status and review authority under 192, Chesapeake certainly supports the safety review of those facilities. I would share, however, the bulk or nearly all incidents related to pipeline failure in the Commonwealth come primarily from folks that dig into those pipelines by not using the Pennsylvania One Call system. It's not been picked up in our verbal testimony today, and I wanted to provide full support from our industry, especially my company, for the Pennsylvania One Call system and adherence to that from our industry.
Thank you. I have one additional question for Mr. Spiegelmeier, and that is a published report that your transport license may have been revoked by the DEP for some road repairs that were incumbent upon your company that weren't getting done. Would you like to speak to that?
Absolutely, and thank you for asking the question, Commissioner. We employ 23 road contractors, Pennsylvania local road contractors, repairing roads in Bradford County. We have road use agreements and have bonded every single mile nearly of roads in Bradford County, Pennsylvania, and we're working closely with the local DOT to address road concerns. Indeed, the freeze-thaw in Pennsylvania was significant this year, especially in the rural areas of the Commonwealth. Many of the roads that we're using to transport water, equipment to service natural gas wells were never constructed with the proper base to be able to handle the heavy loads that we're hauling. And we know in advance that we're going to have to get up and build those roads to better specification to be able to haul long term. But we also are bonded and we have road use agreements to make sure that when we're complete, those roads will be repaired to their full condition. Thank you very much.
I'd just like to add on that one of the complaints that I've been hearing consistently is the road damage that's has been occurring, especially in the Northwest. Up in the Northeast. And obviously, if you can speak to those in a very favorable way, it would help the industry tremendously.
Thank you.
Commissioner Harrelson.
Thank you, Chairman Cawley. I have two questions, and just general questions for the panelists. Anybody want to take them? First, there's been some anecdotal stories about some environmental regulations that I guess the DEP had to yank two permits from a driller up in Tioga County. And I recognize you've expressed in your testimony today really your commitment to environmental stewardship, which I do not call into question. I think the industry as a whole has done a remarkable job. However, and I'm not here, I will say this, as a laissez-faire regulator, I don't want to build the dynasty here at the Public Utility Commission, but I also recognize that we do have this goal of overseeing pipeline safety and ensuring some type of minimum standards are met. So how can we be confident that it's been thrown out there to us that this self-policing system will work and that safety will be maintained?
Oh, I'll give a start to that. Commissioner Paulson, I would share with you in mid-2007 through 2008, this industry worked on the Pennsylvania's regulatory scheme was built on a vertical drill industry. Horizontal development is dramatically different in the way we construct well pads and the way we conduct our operations, and we work very closely with the Department of Environmental Protection in developing a regulatory scheme that works to make sure that the environment is protected while allowing this opportunity for the Commonwealth to grow. I think we've reached a very good balance. The industry raised its hand fairly early on. The natural gas production well fee for a permit was $100 in the Commonwealth. Today, on average, those permits exceed $4,000, and it's based on a per foot of drill basis. The increase has been sufficient to allow the department to have a separate fund set aside where they can add 68 new permit writers and inspectors to oversee this industry. We welcome a high environmental bar. We know it's the only way this industry will succeed long term, and we'll work closely with the commission to make sure it's done correctly. In specific response to the question about two permits not being complete, I think after the review of those permits, they found some section of that permit that may not have been completed, and I think they gave the operator the opportunity to go back and amend those permits and complete them.
I would just add to that, Commissioner Paulson, that you mentioned the self-regulating. I think the industry looks at the scenario under the jurisdiction of Chapter 192 as very clearly regulations that we follow. It is not a self-regulating in that we're looking at the specific requirements on a risk-based standard and putting in place the provisions to protect the public safety. As Lindsay mentioned, building at times self-choosing to build higher standards with the anticipation that it's a lot easier as populations change and as the landscape may change to take a pipeline from a Class 1 to a Class 2 area, that we're a lot better off economically to have invested those dollars in a pipeline prior to that growth. So I don't see it as self-regulating in that we're covered by Chapter 192, but I do see that there is a lot of self-interest for the industry to keep safety top of mind and to be proactive, and I think that's where that's where we're all better off.
I also want to commend you. I know from a road impact, I heard David, you mentioned that you're cooperating with local. And we'll hear, I think, from Dave Sanko here later, but you're working with local communities to help them from a road maintenance perspective. We hear, as PUC commissioners here, again, anecdotal stories about the disposal of the frack water in wastewater treatment facilities that were never really capable of handling those type of disposed solids. So
are we going to see an investment or a commitment from the industry to help? That is an issue going forward, because our water utility folk have shared that with us. I think the DEP secretary has had meetings with you on this issue. But just for today's hearing, the plan of attack with the disposal of the frack water.
I'll start on this. The plan of attack has already been in place. Over the last 9 to 12 months, the industry has made tremendous strides in recycling of that frack water. So you look at some companies that have reached the 100% recycle. As an industry, we're well above the 60% recycle. So you're getting many fewer gallons that need that final treatment. And that's been through innovation to increase the chloride content of the water going back down into the well. So that's that's been the first line of attack. The second approach is really very much to look at a menu of options over the long term to be able to handle both economically and environmentally safely this water. We have had multiple meetings with the Department of Environmental Protection. They understand that the source of total dissolved solids in the Commonwealth predated the first Marcellus well by decades, and they also understand and have testified in public hearings that the sources of the total dissolved solids are from a combination of municipal wastewater, road salt runoff, certainly from industrial, from both active and legacy coal mines. This issue is one that has predated the Marcellus industry being here in Pennsylvania, and therefore the solution needs to be very much a holistic approach. We do not want to be part of a legacy that our grandchildren will look back on, and have every intention to have them look back proudly on this era. By the same token, this issue of total dissolved solids in our Commonwealth's waterways is not one owned solely by the natural gas industry.
Commissioner, I'll respond as well, and Keith, you did a great job summarizing what the industry has done. I can give you Chesapeake's direct experiences that we reuse nearly 100% of the water that comes back, produced water that comes off of our well operations. That reduces our need for fresh water. We actually capture that in a steel line closed loop system. We run it through a 20 micron filter to take out heavies, and then we end up mixing that water with fresh water in our next frack operation.
And Dave, to add one more comment to that, what I would be concerned seeing that we would be putting, required to put in place a series of high capital, very high energy intensive treatment plants to serve just simply one industry. Getting to 500 parts per million in discharge of total dissolved solids before we put it back in a waterway to mix with the background conditions is not the best environmental solution. It's certainly not a holistic solution. So I hope that we very much are not looking at one size, let's be done and move on with this, because I don't think we've had a full assessment, and the Independent Regulatory Review Commission agreed with this. We've not had a full economic assessment of what it means to have one industry treat with that kind of energy use and that kind of additional residuals to our air and our landfills from that approach.
Thank you. My last question is, based upon your experiences in other states, what is one real good piece of advice you could give us as policymakers and regulators here in Pennsylvania not to screw this thing up, as my friends in Texas tell us?
I'll go first. We spent a lot of time as an industry preparing for this hearing and really understanding the current landscape in Pennsylvania, and certainly as we talked about in our intro comments, the difference between safety, regulating for safety, and regulating for utility status. We believe that the clear use of Chapter 192 in Pennsylvania is very protective of the people of Pennsylvania, and provides a consistent, and as Vice Chairman Christie said at the beginning, certainty and clarity. And we don't want to have any gaps in that safety program. And I think by implementing Chapter 192 here, we will continue to have that clarity and that certainty and consistency. Keeping that separate from issues of utility status is going to be very important, and I think that would be my key takeaway.
Commissioner, I just add one key point, so we don't screw it up in Pennsylvania, it's the issue of communication. We've conducted hundreds of meetings across the Commonwealth to get out and try and educate the public. I'd like to thank the Penn State Extension Service, Agriculture Extension Service, that's done an extraordinary job to help educate the public throughout the Commonwealth. But as an industry, we have a responsibility there as well. We also have a responsibility to work closely with you as regulators. I appreciate the chairman inviting us into his conference room on several occasions to have a dialogue on these issues. So also with the Department of Environmental Protection, our land agents in the DCNR, the Game Commission, the Fish and Boat Commission, we need to work as partners and not work against each other. And I think the best way to do that is through communication. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Dankovich, to begin with, we've had a long relationship with the Office of Pipeline Safety, your office. And our people have told us repeatedly that your office is increasingly concerned that there are gathering lines, pipelines in Pennsylvania that are not being inspected by us as your agent. Can you verify that? And if that's true, can you explain why you're getting increasingly nervous?
Thank you, Chairman Colley. Concern may be a better word than nervous.
Nervous is my word. Concern is good enough.
PHMSA is concerned. As you know, PHMSA, on an annual basis, reviews the Department of Gas Safety's operation. And Pennsylvania, as noted in our testimony, does not have jurisdiction over certain lines. Master meter operators, all intrastate transmission lines are not under the jurisdiction of the commission, and of course gathering lines. And if you look at all 50 states, in certain respects, Pennsylvania stands out as not having full jurisdiction in certain areas, and those areas I just mentioned. We are pushing Pennsylvania, and I believe Mr. Metro, the Chief of Gas Safety Division, can verify that we are pushing him, and we just talked about this recently, to take over jurisdiction. And I encourage this commission to look favorably with regards to jurisdiction over not only gathering lines, but other lines such as intrastate transmission lines, all intrastate transmission lines, and master meter operations.
And just briefly describe what a master meter situation is. I know, but for the benefit of the people here in our audience, would you tell them?
A master meter situation occurs when the operator of a system, such as a number of apartment complexes, buy gas from one large meter and then either sub-meter it to the individual homeowners in that apartment complex, or collect rents, collect the gas rates through rents. So it really is an apartment complex, but it's Penn State University, main campus up in Penn State. Paul Metro and I were up there last year, and I encouraged Paul to take over jurisdiction of the master meter situation that is occurring on the Penn State main campus in State College, Pennsylvania.
Thank you. And it's not just Penn State. There are a number of hospitals in Pennsylvania. There are apartment complexes, as you mentioned. There are trailer parks, campsites. There is the Philadelphia Gas Works supply to the Philadelphia Housing Authority, all of it behind the master meter. And what that means is our jurisdiction stops at the meter, and we can't go beyond to inspect the pipelines behind that meter. And if I understand your concern, it's that somebody ought to be checking behind the meter
for that sometimes vast system of pipes behind it. I want to thank you for your testimony and for your efforts to work with our gas safety people and to be here today. If it were up to this commission, we would have this jurisdiction, but again, it requires legislative action. Ms. Claiborne, I was really pleased to see your testimony that you have supported the commission's efforts to obtain legislative authority for this kind of jurisdiction, which is exactly what has been described. This is 49 Code of Federal Regulations, Chapters 191 to 199. We don't want any more or any less than what the federal government requirements are. And as you know, it could be different. For instance, in Texas, it's a little different. But we also have asked the legislature for increased authority to increase fines to make them commensurate with the federal fines. That bill has passed the Pennsylvania House of Representatives and is waiting action in the Senate Consumer Protection and Professional Licensure Committee. I see from the testimony of the Marcellus Shale Coalition that you are concerned that we want more than just commensurate federal jurisdiction. I speak for my colleagues, I think, when I say that we're not trying to empower the government here. We just want adequate authority to protect the public. We have an interest in licensing regulation, not economic regulation. What's the difference? Well, under licensing regulation, we would license entities to the extent that we would have the ability to inspect pipelines, handle complaints, fine violators, and assure service quality. Now, that's not full economic regulation. That's not what we're looking for. We have no interest in adding to the 8,000 public utilities we already regulate. We don't want to get into your rates, your terms and conditions of service. We don't want you to file tariffs. We're not interested in what your accounting is. We're not interested in reliable reporting requirements. We're not going to go send auditors to your books. We're not going to seek the approval of your securities, your certificates, and your other financial transactions. We don't want to know who your affiliated interests are and have to approve transactions between them. But we do want to be able to assess the industry a reasonable fee. We don't want to make any money on the assessments, but we need enough money to hire additional inspectors, which could be as many as 10 or 12, depending on how fast this industry grows. And we don't have to add all 10 or 12 at the beginning. We will ask for one or two or three to start with. We'll have to go through the normal budget process in the legislature to justify what the fee would be on the industry. We're not interested in assessing the fee based on the gross annual interstate revenues. We don't care what those are. It can be based, as you have suggested, and I was pleased to see it, on a per mile basis. Let's just keep it simple. So please let me assuage the industry's fears that we're trying to get jurisdiction to build an empire or to line our coffers. That's not the case. Let me just ask some other questions here. You heard me mention our concern about gas migration and the damage it can impose on adjoining properties. Has that been a problem elsewhere? Is it happening in Pennsylvania, do you know?
Well, gas migration, if I may start, and then Dave, please feel free to add to my comments. Gas migration in Pennsylvania is a long-term issue, and I think it's certainly extremely important from a quality of life and health and safety. It has simply become a bigger focus now because of the additional drawing that's going on in the Marcellus. There was a study that Penn State University did in 2009 that showed that greater than 40% of the private water wells, and there are about 1.2 million of those private water wells in Springs in Pennsylvania, that are contaminated, and a large fraction of those are contaminated from naturally occurring methane in the surface of Pennsylvania. That's consistent with many of our members when they do go to drill a well within 1,000 feet or more diameter or radius of that well, they would do pre-testing and find out what is pre-existing in private water wells in the vicinity of that drilling. And it is not uncommon to have 25% and higher contamination in water wells before Marcellus drilling takes place. So I do think this is an issue, and one that I guess I look at as another leg of the safety stool that we ought to be considering, how to better protect private drinking water wells from the naturally occurring methane that has been here long before the Marcellus well has been, first Marcellus well has been drilled, and certainly will have even greater attention as the Marcellus activity picks up.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention today that Representative Pickett has a bill in the General Assembly right now requesting that we expand the radius for testing water wells, and I would share with you Chesapeake and our industry supports that legislation to expand the radius for water well testing in advance. We've also supported the update to Chapter 78 casing regulations. We think that if there is an issue, that will help address it, and we look forward to a dialogue with the Department of Environmental Protection to make sure that stray gas doesn't become a major problem in the Commonwealth.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Pickett. Working with that bill, I think we might be able to support that. To the extent that you can, I would really like a commitment from the industry that when it's appropriate that you're going to use common carriers for supplies that are certificated by this commission. That may not always be the case, but consistent with your best practices, we should use carriers that are certificated because that means they've been inspected and that they have adequate insurance for the public's protection. You don't have to give me an answer right now. You may want to discuss that, but I think it ought to be discussed in your industry.
Well, Chairman, this issue of best practices across the industry is really one of the founding goals of the Marcellus Shale Coalition. We will certainly take that recommendation to the group that's working on the best practices around that area.
Thank you. Now, I understand that there has been the issue of land agents, shall we call them rogue land agents, overzealous land agents, making representations to landowners that they shouldn't, and I'm sure you don't approve of it. But I understand at least Texas has dealt with this issue before. Can any of you enlighten me about that?
Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, I'd be happy to. Over the past several years, the industry has become aware of that issue. As Katie said earlier, it's certainly not something we condone, and we really think that places us in a very bad position in light of the public. For the most part, we've self-policed that in the way that we've used industry associations and corporate executives and, frankly, our contacts at the legislature and regulators, that when we find our operators behaving in that manner, we have placed phone calls and tried to talk with them about that. There has been some legislation in Texas with regard to that that essentially said that if you hold yourself out as someone with condemnation authority, that you indeed become a utility, no questions asked, that once you've represented yourself, I use the equation essentially when you represent you're pregnant. That legislation was unfortunately vetoed because of other provisions that were added to it at the last minute in the Texas legislative process. I'm not sure what will happen to it during the upcoming session in 2011, but that is one approach that industry took to try to address the problem over the course of the last 24 to 36 months.
We would invite the commission, if they hear of a land agent, you know, not being above board, putting a landowner's feet to the fire on a lease, to bring it to the coalition so we can address it, especially if we know what company we're trying to represent. We can't fix it unless we know there's a direct problem there. And again, folks in this room that may be approached by a land agent, if they're given a lease, we'd ask them to seek counsel with someone that has knowledge of oil and gas law to review that lease and do not sign that lease until they have someone that's a professional advise you as a landowner. An educated landowner is our best friend.
One final question. We all applaud the growing success of the Marcellus Shale development. What effect is that going to have on so-called shallow drilling that this Commonwealth has enjoyed for decades? Because, of course, it's going to have an effect on the least cost procurement practices of our natural gas utilities when they acquire their default supply for customers who don't switch to an alternative supplier. What's going to happen to the shallow industry in Pennsylvania? And for that matter, what's going to be the effect of Marcellus Shale? Is it going to drive down the costs of gas across the board, even if the gas isn't used in Pennsylvania directly?
Katie, I'll jump on this pretty quickly. The gas is sold on the New York Mercantile Exchange. The shale plays across the country have already lessened the volatility in natural gas prices across our nation. The supply picture for natural gas is far greater than it was just 12 months ago. And I think with enhancements in technology, I think that supply picture is going to continue to grow. The fact that we're only probably 2 years into the development of the Marcellus, the question about the impact on shallow producers remains unknown. Much of property in Pennsylvania, especially the southwest, central portions and northwest portions of the Commonwealth, much of that acreage is already held by production from small shallow producers. We need to partner and work closely with the shallow producers. In fact, we invite the new Pioga organization as a member of our Marcellus Shale group. They actually attend our meetings, and we're trying to work very closely with the shallow production industry of the Commonwealth.
I have no further questions. Before I turn it back to Judge Caldwell, I want to thank you all for appearing and sitting on the hot seat. Commissioner Gardner.
Thank you. Before we close, the chairman has spoken to this as well as Commissioner Paulson, and I'd like to make it at least a majority that there is no power play here. We're not interested in building an empire. We're interested in prudent oversight and the safety and the trust of Commonwealth citizens. Thank you.
Judge Caldwell.
Thank you, Chairman. If anyone on the panel has extra copies of your comments, you can leave them up here. Thank you very much for your participation today, and we will take a 10-minute break.
Thank you.